Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep experience in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity. If you want to grow the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. There's one topic that we can say with confidence is top of mind for a lot of learning business leaders these days, and that topic is uncertainty. More specifically, how to navigate your learning business in uncertain times.
And so navigating uncertainty is what we'll talk about in this episode, number 453, and in our next episode. And our two-part conversation is going to draw heavily on a keynote that you gave recently, Jeff, to a group of standards development organizations. But the ideas that you shared apply not just to SDOs, but more broadly across all types of learning businesses.
Yeah, definitely. Whether you're with an association, a higher ed continuing education unit, a for-profit training firm, or really any market-facing learning business, we're all operating in a much more uncertain, fast-moving environment than we were in even a few years ago. And that's what I addressed in that keynote, and it's what we're going to dive into here today.
And you started your talk, good comp lit major that you are, with a Zen parable.
Yeah, always a good policy to start with a Zen parable. This is an old one. I can remember even reading to kids when younger. There's a farmer whose horse runs away one day, and the neighbors say, oh, that's very bad luck. You're not going to be able to farm your land now. And this farmer says, maybe. And then a day later, his horse comes back and brings 6 wild horses with it. And the neighbors say, oh, that's very lucky. Now you're very rich. And the farmer says, maybe. And a few days later, the farmer's son decides to try and tame one of the wild horses, gets thrown off and breaks his leg. And the neighbors, of course, they show up once again and they say, oh, that's really bad luck. And the farmer, of course, says, maybe. And then the next week, soldiers come to draft young men into the army to fight in a brutal war, and the farmer's son is spared because of the broken leg. And how lucky, the neighbors say, and of course the farmer says, maybe. And that's where the parable ends.
So not to be too reductive, but the point of the parable is that what looks good or bad in the moment may not stay that way. And so a mindset of thoughtful uncertainty, a maybe mindset, can actually offer valuable perspective.
And that kind of mindset leads to the question of how do learning businesses operate in a world where the outcomes aren't always clear and the variables keep shifting.
And you outlined 2 major types of uncertainty in your talk, Jeff. You talked about new disruptions and continuing disruptions.
That's right. So, we're facing some really intense new disruptions. And by new, I mean, the last year to 6 months or so. And these newer disruptions include things like economic uncertainty with inflation, tighter budgets, slower decision cycles, those sorts of things. And then, of course, there are also political dynamics, both national and international, with, elections and funding shifts and geopolitical tension, all affecting how people plan and prioritize learning.
And then there are also continuing disruptions, so things that have been reshaping our work and our lives over the past decade or so, and those disruptions aren't going away. And I would say one of those is the evolution of the workforce.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the rise of non-traditional career paths, the emphasis we now see on upskilling and reskilling, new forms of credentialing, those have been growing for years, but now they feel like they're accelerating. Learners expect more flexibility. They expect relevant, personalized experiences. And employers want proof of competence, not just participation.
And then there's ongoing disruption coming from the realm of technology, particularly artificial intelligence.
Yeah, AI is obviously the big one right now. It's reshaping how we develop content, assess learning, and really even how we think about expertise. But it's also just the latest step in a longer trend of tech-driven change. You know, so whole, you know, massive open online courses or the evolution of LMSs, microlearning, mobile-first design, you know, all of it's pushing us to rethink how we deliver and sustain learning over time.
So with all of that swirling, a natural instinct can be to retreat or hunker down, to try to avoid risk by not doing anything. But you argue for a different response. You talked about anti-fragility in that speech that you gave.
Yeah, I mean, it's a concept that I really like. It comes from Nassim Taleb, who's a, kind of a philosopher who came out of risk management, of all things, kind of the financial world, and really was informed by his work there in developing some of his theories. But the way he views it, a fragile system breaks under pressure. And on the other hand, a resilient system resists pressure and it survives. But an anti-fragile system actually grows stronger because of pressure. And that's really what we want in a learning business, or really any business, a structure and culture that not only can weather uncertainty and the disruptions that come with it, but actually learns from that and adapts and improves. And so I think it's probably helpful to have some examples around this to get at what Taleb is talking about. So, you know, in the human body, for example, the muscular system I would describe as anti-fragile. If you've, you know, ever spent some time at the gym and had anybody instruct you on how to do things right, you know you have to work your muscles to the point of failure, to the point where you actually get little tears in your muscle for them to actually then grow and for you to develop that muscle mass. So that that human muscular system is kind of anti-fragile. In Greek mythology, and this is often one of the examples that's given for anti-fragility, the Hydra would be an anti-fragile being. You know, if you chop off one of the heads of the Hydra, two are going to grow back. So it's always going to get stronger if you keep hacking at it. But let's talk about something from the learning world, specifically from the association world. A few years ago when COVID happened, Ralph Johnson, who at that time was the CEO of the Veterinary Medicine Association Executives, which is kind of like the association for the heads of veterinary medical associations, he saw what was happening with COVID. They had, I think, their own annual conference planned, and he was thinking, we're not going to be able to have this thing. It's going to have to go virtual. And as a matter of fact, that's going to be true for all of my members. All of their meetings are going to have to go virtual as well. So what he did was, instead of holding the sort of usual face-to-face meeting, he held a virtual conference about how to hold a virtual conference for his members, for the leaders of his membership organizations. So he actually took that opportunity, that disruption, to do something that created tremendous value for his members, both right there in the moment, and I'm sure increased their perception of VMAE as a source of value over the longer term.
I do think those examples are helpful, and bonus points for pulling in Greek mythology to go along with your Zen parable earlier. Well done there.
Spanning the globe here, yeah.
And I think this idea of anti-fragility brings to mind for me that kind of old saw, never waste a crisis. One of the things that you just shared, I mean, Ralph Johnson, I think that was sort of not wasting a crisis, right? You could have of said, oh, no, you know, we can't have our annual meeting. But instead of sort of panicking or even just pivoting for his organization alone, he saw an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I think that was very powerful. So that was definitely not wasting a crisis there. Now, when you talk about building anti-fragility, you were talking about some habit sets that we can cultivate to help us with that anti-fragility. And habit set is a term that you borrow from Kevin Eikenberry, who's been on the podcast before.
Yeah, even just recently. We often talk about skill sets and mindsets. I think everybody knows those terms. But Kevin emphasizes, and you know what I found very powerful in talking to him most recently, is the idea of habit sets. And they're not just what you know or believe, but what you consistently do. Habit sets are embedded ways of acting that help you navigate change effectively.
And you outlined four habit sets in your keynote: informed agility, strategic foresight, stakeholder intimacy, and portfolio thinking. So let's talk through each of those four habit sets, and let's start with informed agility.
Right. So informed agility means moving quickly, but not recklessly. So it's about testing early, learning fast, and adjusting in real time. You know, I think a lot of organizations equate strategy with, you know, very long and deliberate planning. And of course, you know, you do want to be careful. You do want to be deliberate when you're putting together a strategy. But in uncertain times, strategy has to be more fluid. And it's not about predicting and locking in a plan. It's about sensing, responding, and iterating. I think it's exactly what Ralph Johnson did at VMAE. That was an informed agility there. He learned quickly about what the whole virtual conference thing was about, and then he used that.
When you gave an example of organizations that experimented with new to them anyway, delivery formats during the pandemic, maybe launching virtual events, as was the case with Ralph and VMAE, or, you know, new on-demand learning resources, and not waiting for perfection, but sort of saying, we're going to go ahead and put this out there, and we're going to learn based on how our audience responds to this.
Right. I mean, they weren't waiting for all the answers. They tried something, they listened to feedback, they refined the offer, and that's informed agility. It's not just about speed. It's also about insight. You need mechanisms to gather data and hear from your audience as you go, not at some, you know, sort of arbitrary timeline of every 3 years or 5 years when it's, quote, time to conduct your annual needs assessment again. Uncertainty isn't just a challenge. It's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep expertise in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity.
Okay, so that was a look at informed agility. Let's move to the second habit set, strategic foresight, which I think ties very nicely to what you were just talking about, Jeff, about, you know, listening as part of what you're piloting or trying out. And strategic foresight really is about scanning the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, strategic foresight, it's not about trying to predict the future with any, you know, sort of real accuracy. It's about watching for signals, you know, seeing patterns that are emerging and asking, what might this mean for us? And then, and more importantly, what would we do if this trend accelerated?
Yeah, we've had Rohit Bhargava on the podcast before, actually 4 times before, and he talks about the non-obvious, that you're looking for non-obvious trends. You're looking for the stuff that's out there, but nobody else is quite paying attention to it yet. But you can begin to get an idea of where it's going to go and what that might mean. And if you can do that, if you can pay attention to it and see what it might mean, boy, that's a real leg up in terms of being able to respond to what your audience needs.
Yeah, I mean, Rohit talks about that sort of thing. And Jeff DeCagna, who we've also had on the podcast multiple times, I think he's another 4-timer. He's really big on strategic foresight. So it's appropriate to mention his name here, too. He describes strategic foresight as an intentional process of learning with the future.
Yeah, I like that, learning with the future. You know, and I think some of those trends that you might be looking for when you have your strategic foresight habit set going are things like, you know, generative AI, remote first workplaces, how certification and licensure requirements are shifting. And none of those should be total surprises now. I mean, they don't even qualify as non-obvious, but there may be some non-obvious trends that relate to those.
Yeah, I mean, the signs have been there, and you need to carve out space in your planning and conversation to explore these things before they become urgent. Strategic foresight isn't extra. It's essential as an ongoing, well, habit set.
It's also important to note, too, that it's not necessarily a solo activity, that if you are really going to be engaged in strategic foresight, yes, it's probably about you carving out some time on your own to observe and reflect, but you can also involve others, and you suggest forming foresight groups, even informal ones inside a learning business.
Yeah, I mean, it can be as simple as getting, you know, 3 to 5 colleagues together once a month to discuss, you know, what are we seeing out there? What's on the edge that might move to the center? That small investment can really yield a huge payoff in organizational readiness.
So we've talked about Two of the four habit sets, informed agility and strategic foresight. Let's move on to habit set number three, stakeholder intimacy. And I really appreciate the way you phrase this one, as intimacy really gets at the idea of this being a relationship. It makes clear that this goes beyond just customer service or even customer journey, that this is about real people, not personas.
Yeah, it's about depth. I mean, you know, stakeholder intimacy means you know your learners, your members, your customers, not just in terms of their titles or roles, but their motivations, their context, their struggles. And you know not just the most vocal ones and the ones that, you know, come to your annual meeting and sign up for your courses, but the ones who don't, the ones who are reluctant for whatever reason to respond to your surveys, the ones who maybe never even opened the email asking them to respond to your survey.
And that intimacy can't come from a one-time survey anyway. It really takes ongoing intentional engagement. It is a relationship, and relationships are organic and living, and they evolve and they change.
Yeah, I mean, you listen actively, you conduct interviews, you ask open-ended questions, you test things early and see how people respond. It's about forming, again, genuine relationships with the people you serve. And the payoff is that you can design offerings that actually meet real needs, not just what you assume the needs are.
So that was a look at stakeholder intimacy, and that brings us to our fourth and final habit set, portfolio thinking. And this is really about how you design and structure what you offer.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, I mean, we've been big on this for a long time. Too many organizations really rely on a single point revenue source, like, you know, an annual conference or one major course or credential. And of course, that's risky. Portfolio thinking means developing a range of offerings, different formats, different price points, different entry points into your catalog of options.
And so then you're not selling just one course. You might be building pathways. You might be offering micro-learning and deep dives and bundled subscriptions. You might have place-based learning. You might be offering ongoing support. So there could just be a whole range of things that might be part of your portfolio.
Right. And, you know, ideally, these offerings reinforce each other. They're telling that sort of logical story that fits together. A webinar leads to a short course. A short course leads to a credential. A credential leads to participating in cohort-based communities. So you move from isolated transactions to sustained engagement.
And you made the point that portfolio thinking isn't about doing more. It's about being more coherent and designing with intention. And I think you were just pointing to that with that idea that your offerings hopefully really reinforce one another.
That's the core of any sort of strategy. It's certainly the core of portfolio strategy, being coherent and designing with intention. You don't want 37 unrelated offerings. You want a set of offerings that may be much smaller, but that work together to serve the learner and support your strategy. We'll recap the habit sets and preview what's to come in the second part in our look at navigating uncertainty. So stick around to the end.
At leadinglearning.com/episode453, you'll find show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast.
If you enjoy the Leading Learning podcast, we'd be grateful if you'd mention it to one colleague or coworker you feel would get value from it.
To recap, we talked about four habit sets. First, informed agility. And this is about moving quickly, but with insight. So you want to be piloting and testing and then adjusting in real time.
And then second, we talked about strategic foresight. So regularly scan for weak signals out in your marketplace and explore possible futures.
And then the third habit set, stakeholder intimacy. So this is about staying really close to your learners, your members, your customers, really getting to know them deeply. And then the final habit set we talked about was portfolio thinking. And this is about designing an integrated suite of offerings that help you spread risk and also reinforce value.
And cultivating these habit sets gives you a foundation for navigating uncertainty, not just reacting to it, but learning from it and actually growing stronger.
And in our next episode, we're going to turn to five practice levers that help you activate these habit sets, that help you move from ideas to action.
In the meantime, here's a little homework, something to help with reflection and application. Think about a challenge you're navigating right now, one that you attribute specifically to the uncertainty we're experiencing, one where the ambiguity, volatility, or complexity of the current environment is making the solution difficult to see or act on. Pause here and really think about that. Don't go abstract, get specific.
Maybe your challenge is a drop in enrollment or registration for an event. Maybe it's a stalled product development issue. Maybe it's a board that's hesitant to invest. Whatever it is, really identify that specifically and then ask, how is uncertainty shaping this challenge? And what opportunities might that uncertainty open up?
Sometimes uncertainty isn't just an obstacle, it's a spotlight. It highlights the fragilities in your system. It forces decisions that were frankly long overdue. It creates space for new approaches.
And then once you have that specific challenge in mind, ask which habit set of the four that we talked about could help you address that challenge more effectively. Is it time to be more agile? Is it time to be more attuned to your stakeholders, to be more forward-looking, or to be more intentional in how your offerings work together?
Again, this isn't a rhetorical question. We mean this as something for you to truly try to answer. And these questions aren't just for you as an individual leader. They're great prompts for a team conversation.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.